And they said, the World Service Office is looking for a Nick again. I find a lot of integrity in that from the past, what's gone on. And these guys have a great vision of what is happening with the World Service at this point, because neither one of them are from California. Was that anything else? Is Bob and Tony.
I'm Bob. I'm an addict.
I'm Tony. I'm an addict.
I'm Tony.
And we haven't structured how we're going to do this. We've talked momentarily. Get in the frame, Tony. Grover's got the... Don't look at the camera. Okay?
Okay.
And we've talked briefly about, you know, how do you want to structure this? How do you want to do it? And it's just going to happen the way that it happens. Okay? So probably what we'll do is just a few minutes, you know, personal. You know, this got clean, did what we did, all of that. And then we're going to talk about World Services, you know, briefly, you know, touch a little bit on some of the history, but more, you know, have an opportunity for questions and answers about what's happening now and where are we going and what's, you know, what's our future, what's our vision. So, Tony, please go first.
I'm Tony. I'm an addict.
I got clean in 1982. The other day, either Ted or Lynn called and said, you know, you need to do a bio, and it's like, what the hell is this all about? You know, and my bio basically says that I got clean in 1982. I've served on, you know, like most of us here that have a little bit of clean time. When I got clean in the Carolina region, I was the group. You know, and how many weeks and how many months and how many years I felt like I was the group. And I really like that being in control thing, you know. I mean, it's real easy to make things happen in your home group when you ask all the right questions to the right people. And I had all the right answers. You know, so it was one of those things in Orangeburg, South Carolina in 1982 when there Narcotics Anonymous was not around where I was. And people in AA helped us get started. You know, I think it's mainly because they didn't want us in their room. But they helped us get started. You know, and those are the people that, for me, those are the people that helped us help Narcotics Anonymous begin. You know, and there are individuals that are members of our fellowship today and individuals that are no longer with us that cultivated it and made it grow into where it is today and is still growing. We talked earlier about history, and everybody in here, everybody in our fellowship is part of Narcotics Anonymous history. You know, if your home group started 5 years ago, that needs to be recorded and sent to World Services, WSO, as a clearinghouse to, you know, to have that information. I mean, I know a lot of people, we are not a secret society, you know, but we are a secret society within Narcotics Anonymous. Because I don't know about everybody's home group, and I'm not going to stand here and claim that I know a lot about everybody else's home group. But I know that my home group is dependent upon the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous to maintain and continue to grow and prosper. You know, without the fellowship, my home group is not Narcotics Anonymous. You know, standing alone, it's a group. And my home group's name is All Kidding Aside. And, you know, it's really a neat home group because there's like three members. And we have attendees, it's a literature study, and we have our attendance is probably 5 to 10 a week. You know, and it's a neat thing. It's a neat thing. The people that are interested in recovery and interested in our literature come to that group. And we do a lot of neat stuff. I got involved in public information because I was the member in our home group. And we did have a couple more addicts show up about 6 months later. You know, and we grew, and the meeting is still going on. I mean, it's changed its name a couple of times, but it's still going on. But I got involved in public information, got really excited about going and standing on the street corner with a little sign saying, Narcotics Anonymous this way, you know, getting real excited about going on radio stations and saying, yes, Narcotics Anonymous is in Orangeburg, South Carolina. Got excited about going to TV stations and getting really pumped up about all that stuff. And somebody said, man, you need to read the traditions. You know, being a newcomer, it's like, why? 6 months clean, Narcotics Anonymous saved my life. You know, I'm a new person now. I didn't even know what a person was. You know, I had no idea. And then things started happening and getting involved in service. And people from our region, a couple of y'all probably know Pete Cole. But, you know, and that's something else that really gets me. Whose anonymity am I trying to protect? If you're a member of Narcotics Anonymous and you come to Ladson, South Carolina, and you look Tony W. up in the phone book, you will not find me. You know, my name is Tony Walters. And if you come to Ladson, South Carolina, all you got to do is call information and you can find me. Or call the helpline and they'll find me. But it's just the idea that we want to protect ourselves from ourselves. You know, and it's, I mean, that's not what this is about. This is about being open and loving and caring and sharing, you know. So I got involved in public information. I found out a lot of things that I was doing that were not following our traditions the hard way by doing stuff and doing it wrong, you know. And I was called one of those NA Nazis, not that. You know, that's a bad thing, but that's just one of the things that I was called when I was early in recovery. And it was because I felt like if y'all, Steve said it, if y'all did it my way, then we wouldn't have all the problems that we're having. And things just started changing and growing, man. I mean, we used to travel to Greensboro, used to travel to Cherokee, used to travel to Boone, North Carolina, travel down to Charleston. Just all over. And the Carolina region is two states, or was. Now there's another region, the North Carolina region, and that's a different story, and I'll let somebody else handle that. But, you know, the Carolina region has been very strong and very active in world services. I mean, it was many years where we sent five or six people to the conference. We had at least one person on every committee. You know, the financial support was there, the people support was there, and that's how I got involved in World Services. You know, I became part of the WSCPI committee, became a voting member. I was a pool member, a voting member, and then became vice chair and chair of the World Service Conference Public Information Committee. And it's the experience that I got from y'all that helped me continue to do what I was doing in World Services. You know, it was my concern for how we were carrying the message. It's my concern about how we were being perceived in the general public. You know, how our fellowship looked. You know, because if we continue to go to conventions or continue to have meetings in places and continue to throw cigarette butts on the floor and not clean them up and not take care of the facilities and not respect the facilities that we're in, they continue to ask us not to come back. And so part of the public information effort that I was involved in was letting the home groups know that you needed to clean up after yourself, that you needed to take care of your facility, that you needed to respect the places that we were in. I mean, I know most of y'all probably know of conventions that are no longer happening at places because we went in there and tore it up, you know. And it says somewhere that we will become responsible and productive members of society. Now, some people want to limit that society thing to the Society of Narcotics Anonymous. But for me, it's society at large, you know. I am responsible today. And I still don't like that responsibility, but I'm responsible. You know, that's part of me, what I need to do. I'm responsible for me and my actions today. And I've heard it said several times this weekend, you know, what I'm telling you is me. I'm not speaking for Narcotics Anonymous as a whole. I don't believe that any one person can. But I believe that my story is, or the way I was brought up in this fellowship is part of the history of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I've been clean for a little over 20 years, 21 years, something like that. I think it means something to me, you know. And I've heard people say, it's really funny how our fellowship works. Years and years ago, people would come into our meetings and say, well, if you got up at 6 o'clock and I got up at 7 o'clock, you got more clean time. Bullshit. You know, if I got 20 years and you got a month, I got more clean time. Doesn't mean I know anymore, but I got more clean time. You know, so it's some of those little things that happened in our fellowship that we still try to separate ourselves, you know. But I'm not, Steve said it for me, I'm one choice from getting high. If I make a decision to get high, I can do it, just like the newcomer. You know, we all need help or we wouldn't still be here. You know, I'm not here today because I feel like I have all the answers for the history or all the stuff that's gone right or wrong or indifferent in our fellowship. I'm here because I have a love for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and I've been doing it a while. I got involved in World Services by doing what Steve did. You know, hearing people say, well, they're doing this to us. You know, and then finally making the decision to go out there and participate and figuring out that them was us and us was them. And, you know, we were all the same. And I don't believe that anybody walks into the conference floor or anybody walks into an NA meeting or who's been around in service for a while and says, well, I'm going to intentionally fuck this whole thing up. You know, I don't believe that. I don't believe that. I believe that all of the history that we have has taught us. You know, we talk about experience, strength, and hope. And our history teaches us some of the things that we don't need to continue to do. I mean, we found out early on in an inventory that communications was one of our biggest problems, or the biggest problems, and it's still the biggest problem. I mean, we have trouble communicating with our sponsor, supposed to be the person that knows us the best. And then people wonder why didn't World Services tell us this? And it's like, you know what? World Services passed the information on to your RD or your RSR or your whatever you want to call them, the people that represent you at the conference, and they decided that it wasn't important enough or something, and the information wasn't passed on, or the information was passed on to the RCM or ASR, and they decided they didn't have time to go to the ASC, you know? And then the GSRs get the brunt of it saying, well, why didn't y'all tell us this? You know what, guys? It's up to us to hold people responsible and hold people accountable for their jobs. How many of y'all were a GSR in the first 90 days? Yeah. What is the most important position in our fellowship? Not in our group. We don't have any coffee. You know, the GSR, I believe, is the most, you know, that's the person that's representing my home group at the ASC. And we're going to give that person the responsibility at 90 days to tell us what's going on. They don't even know what a GSR is. You know? And we expect that from them. And I don't know, man. It just really gets me. My wife is she's got a little over 20 years clean, and she's the alternate GSR for our home group. And when she walks in the room, wow, there's 20 years clean. You know, it's not, wow, there's a GSR that's got some clean time. You know, and I'm going to tell you something, guys. In my area, 20 years, that's a lot of clean time in our area. Okay? But that ain't got nothing to do when you're sitting around a table representing a home group. It doesn't make any difference. You know, we all have our opinions, we all have our feelings, and we all have an idea of how things need to go. And it's how many times do we have to continue to make the same mistakes and expect it to be different? And what really pisses me off is when we go in and we start talking about stuff in our fellowship and say, you know what, guys, we did this 15 years ago. Well, we're going to do it again. Okay. These are the results you're going to get. You don't know that. Yeah, I did. You know, years and years ago, my dad would tell me, it's been my experience that if you do this, this is what's going to happen. And when I got in the fellowship, it's like, you don't know what you're talking about. You still don't know what you're talking about, Dad. You know, and the old timers that were in the fellowship when I got here, they didn't know what they were talking about. You know, I knew because I was different. And I found out the same thing that most of us find out is that we're all the same. We come from different backgrounds. We come from different places, but we're still all the same. I was kind of like Steve said about being hugged. First thing I thought about was when a guy came up to give me a hug, I walked away and checked my pockets. You know, they could have been a lot better pickpocketing than I was. But I walked away and checked. And then I found out it was something about the unconditional love in this fellowship. You know, y'all taught me how to do that. Y'all taught me how to love myself. I became a member of the World Board in 1998. I was a member. I was on the trustees for a very short period of time. The trustees, we were elected. I was elected to the Board of Trustees, and then it was dissolved. You know, and I took that personal for a long period of time. I didn't. You know, I felt like that the direction that the World Services was going was the best thing for NA as a whole right now. Being part of the fellowship and being part of your World Board the service has just enhanced everything in my life. The last couple of years I've been going through, I'm getting old. You know, a couple of speakers said, well, we used to do it this way. We used to get in a car and travel. Well, you know what? In South Carolina and North Carolina, we have about a little over 800 meetings a week. And when I got clean, there was maybe 3 meetings a week. So we did travel. We did travel. What gets me is today is that the people who have a little bit of clean time and went through that no longer share that experience. No longer grab the newcomer and say, you know what? Let's go up here to this meeting. Let's travel for 4 or 5 hours and spend a night with an addict and go to their home group. You know, because that's what we used to do. We used to get a carload and travel all over the state, you know, all over North and South Carolina. We used to have to go to meetings in Atlanta. God damn. You know, and what I heard people say was, what is your recovery worth? Are you willing to go to any length to stay clean? And back in those days when there wasn't very many NA meetings, you had to do what you had to do. You know, it's one of those things that if we continue to have a mindset that we're no longer going to grow and change, you know, and that's something else I needed to tell y'all is that when I got here and I got clean and y'all said you need to change your whole life, I said, okay. And you know how it is. 6 months later, my life had changed. I said, okay, I'm done. And we as a fellowship started and Jimmy Kay and some of the people that have been here this weekend said, you know what, we got to continue to want to change and improve and continue to move forward. And they had that vision back then, and you know what? We still have that vision today. We continue to change. We continue to need to change. The only constant in our fellowship is change. And if we don't change, we die. You know, so I have to continue to move forward, or backward, or sideways, or somewhere, but I got to continue to move. You know, I've made 1 or 2 mistakes since I've been clean.
Not many more.
Okay, maybe 1 or 2 more than 1 or 2. You know, I've heard several people talk about how many times they've been married, and I really, it made me feel good, guys. I mean, I started 8 times. God, I've been married 6. I said, cool. There's somebody that's got more experience than me. You know? But that's what it's all about. It's about sharing that experience, strength, and hope. You want to get the old-timers involved? You saw it this weekend. All you have to do is ask. All you have to do is ask. If you wonder why there are not any old-timers at your ASC, call them and ask them why they're not there. You know? Stay involved in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. If you're not here, then Narcotics Anonymous isn't going to be here. Everybody in here has a story. Everybody in here is striving for something. And for me, it's to stay clean and to continue to help carry the message of recovery to the still suffering addict, no matter where that addict is. You know, being part of this fellowship has truly been a blessing. You know, I came in here not knowing what a God was, and y'all taught me. You know, when I went to AA for a short period of time, and they said, well, believe in the doorknob or the fucking tree, and it's like, okay, what has that got to do with anything? You know? And then I came in here, and y'all told me that I could believe in anything I wanted as long as it was outside myself, loving and caring. And I believed in y'all because y'all came up to me and tried to feel me up, giving me hugs, but well, that's okay. Sometimes I liked it. Sometimes you guys, I didn't. You know? I did all the things that y'all told me not to do. Y'all said don't get in a relationship. I did. Y'all said don't have an intimate sexual relationship with a newcomer. I did. Y'all said, get a sponsor. I didn't. Y'all said, work the steps. I said, I'm done with those. Y'all said, apply spiritual principles. And I said, what spiritual principles? And then I got real with me and you and started understanding that if I didn't change my whole attitude, if I didn't change my whole mindset, that I would die. When I got here, y'all told me that if I continued to use, I was going to die. And that scared me. You know, and today I tell my sponsees, you might very well have a chance to go back out and use. In fact, you do. But are you going to make it back? Are you going to make it back? People with clean time to go back out and relapse, they're not doing something. You know, and I don't know what it is that they're not doing. If they're not going to enough meetings, if they're not writing about it, if they're not talking to their sponsor, I don't know what they're not doing. But we continue to kick people when they have, you know, 5 years clean, go back out, and then they come back in. And then they get clean for 6 months, and then they go back out, and they come back in. And then they get clean for 10 or 15 years, and then they go back out, and they come back in. And we continue to say, it'll be okay. Bullshit. Bullshit. I don't want to die today, guys. And on a daily basis, y'all help me not do that. Y'all have taught me all the spiritual principles that I need to know up to this point, and I'm waiting for y'all to teach me some more. You know, in the last several years, I've gone through a lot of physical stuff. I'm taking this Pegantron shit with the ribavirin. I did interferon and ribavirin a couple of years ago, you know, for hepatitis C. It's just another thing. I mean, and I understand that when I die or when it's time for me to go, that I'm going to go. I don't give a shit what's up. When it's time, it's time, it's done. You know, I'm really grateful that I have the opportunity to come up here and talk to y'all. And I'm sure that there's going to be some questions about the history, about where our service structure is, so I'm not going to even touch on any of that. And now I'm going to let the Bob part of the Bob and Pony show talk.
My name is Bob.
not automatic. And I got clean in Springfield, Missouri, December 12th, 1986. And being the self-centered addict that I am, I looked at the program and very quickly determined that I have the least amount of clean time of anybody that's been at the podium sharing. And it freaked me out. Okay, it just totally freaked me out. It's like, why am I here? You know, why am I here? It's much like the experience that I had in San Diego at the World Convention. Okay, how many were in San Diego? Thank you for coming. Saturday night, the main meeting, right? 21,000 people, 23,000 people in a huge room, right? And I stepped to the microphone and said, my name's Bob, I'm an addict. And as you guys were responding, what was going through my head is, I'm a deep freak from Springfield, Missouri. What the fuck am I doing here? I shouldn't be here. I should just sit down. Go away. Run. Okay? And as that came back and I took a breath, what came in was my recovery said, hold it. You're in the right place. You're in the right place. Doing the right thing for a good reason. So just stand. And I stood there and I took another breath and we had a great time. You know, it was just right there. And that's been just the whole process of my recovery, is sometimes I have to confront those fears. I've got to stand up to it. The first NA meeting I ever attended, I was taken from a treatment center to this meeting, and the topic was vanity. Okay? Since I got clean December 12, 1986, that's the only time I've heard the topic of vanity at an NA meeting. I think it was truly a gotcha. It was a God shot because it got my attention, because the 13, 14 people that were in that room that night, all variety, you know, different people, white, black, male, female, you know, scooter trash to the PTA members, the whole nine yards, everybody was there, just this little microcosm and 13, 14 people, and they were all talking about the same thing, how they felt and how they wanted to make it look good on the outside, you know, and that's part of it was I wanted to, you know, to look good. You know, my process of recovery is looking good. Okay, didn't work. Doing good, you know, getting involved, justifying my existence here by doing every service position that was available within a 60-mile radius, trying to do anything I could to justify being here, and then changing my behavior and actually becoming good, okay, actually working the steps and doing those things that were suggested. So that's been part of the process for me. And it just sort of crystallized as I was standing here. It's sort of like the looking, doing, and being, you know. And being is where that change process has occurred. That's where we are. You know, it's who I am today that has me standing here in front of you. Whenever I got clean, there were 7 meetings a week in Springfield. We had a meeting every day. Okay, 3.5 years later, when I moved from Springfield, we had 27 meetings a week. Okay, it was a brand new area. It had just formed in January. I got clean in December. The area formed in January. At 4 months clean, I was the area PI chairperson. Would I do that to anybody today? No. You know, but was it good for me? Sure it was. So maybe I might. You know, I probably would, and I'd stand right next to him and say, you can do this. Read the traditions. Talk to people. Get support. Because it was wonderful for me. You know, and I got very involved, and that was part of that doingness. But I lived in Springfield for 3.5 years, and then I moved to Wisconsin. I moved up there in 1990. In 1991, I attended my first World Service Conference in Van Nuys, California. And I went out there with the direct and explicit orders of my region to tell those motherfuckers to straighten up. Okay, because it was about those people in California and the rest of the world. Okay, and that was the perspective that I went there with. And I really appreciate Steve saying, you know, the us and them. And he got there and we started talking to people. And I remember I sat next to an unnamed trustee. He was on my left, okay, and his stuff, his paperwork and you know, whenever you're in a conference room for a week, you know, you just get more and more and more and more papers and notebooks, and it kept migrating my direction, and I kept pushing it back his direction, and it kept migrating, and I kept pushing it, you know. And that was the biggest us and them that I had going on the whole time, because I actually got to talk to some of these people. I got to have meals with them. I got to sit down with them and realize then that we actually had the same goal in mind, okay? And at that point is when I began shifting my understanding of how our services work, okay? I've heard about the inverted pyramid. Okay, you can do the inverted pyramid, up, down, all of that. For me, that doesn't work, okay? Okay. What works for me is a visualization of a bullseye. Okay. And this is mine. This isn't World Service. This is Bob's. Visualization of a bullseye, and you have the member at the center. Okay. And surrounding and supporting that member is the group. Okay. They're holding up that member. They're supporting them in their recovery. Supporting the group then would be the area, the next circle. Okay. And then by extension, you can see that everything is being supported. You can drop that down over the top of the pyramid and it leaves the member at the top. Okay? If you drop it down and then there's the base of goodwill is the world. Okay. Teresa, would you stand, please? All right. Teresa's the center of this. Everybody on the perimeter, please stand. Okay? Stand. Just work with me here. Anybody on the outside, on the outer edges, stand. Point at Teresa. Okay? So at this point, it would appear that Debbie and JW are in direct conflict, okay, because they're pointing at one another. You get what I'm saying? They're all pointing at the same thing. Their goal is helping that person. They may come at it from different directions, but the goal is the same. This is our goal, okay? So for me, you can sit down now. For me, it was one of those things that it helped me to understand that what you may say may not be in alignment with what it is that I'm thinking is the best way to approach it, but I need to be open to that. You know, so it kind of relieved me of that view that my oh-so-talented and well-developed synapses in this little brain of mine are the only way to approach a problem. You know, and I had to get open to that. Because, you know, after all, my best thinking got me to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, so that's, and, you know, sometimes I say that with defeat, and sometimes I say that with, you know, a lot of gratitude, and because it actually got me here. I know a lot of people that are roaming around that, you know, because they haven't used drugs, they don't think they're NA, but God knows the way their evidence is showing up in their life, they could use something. You know, no examples. I sometimes have to put the editor on, okay, right, the filter has to be on, because it's just a whirlwind inside my head. I think it is for a lot of us. Whenever I moved to Wisconsin, I got involved in doing World Service. I was the RSR alternate, then the RSR, then a last-minute fill-in as alternate again. Wisconsin has a tradition of sort of like recycling their RSRs, okay? It's like almost the RSR for life kind of approach. And I was in that cycle for a bit. Then in 1996, I went back as the alternate RSR again to the conference in Greensboro, and I was selected to serve as a member of the transition group. Okay, the transition group was the subgroup given the responsibility to take what the resolution group had brought out of the inventory, put those things into action. How can you form that? What would it look like? And we kind of developed that structure. So we were the ones that brought Motion 1 that Steve was referring to before the conference to develop a single board and the current structure that we have, which I'm sure we'll get into. But I served on that for 2 years, you know, and learned a great deal about, again, the approaches. I had to be open to different approaches, you know, because that wasn't going to serve anybody well. If you get one person on a committee, and I'm sure no one here has had this experience, you've got somebody on a committee and theirs is the only good idea. You know, and they're absolutely dedicated to it, and they're passionate about it, and they're committed to it, and there's no other way that anything else is going to be discussed. You know, that sometimes doesn't serve us the best. Sometimes, so I had to step back from my own little self and go there. But we, you know, we did that. The transition group brought that material in 1998. Then the board was formed, and I was elected to the original formation of the board. At the original formation, we drew lots, and I drew a 2-year term. So in the year 2000, I was reelected for my second and final term on the board, second and final. I'm getting it documented, okay, because I've had people already say, well, you know, that first one wasn't really a full term, so you could serve a second 6-year term. And it's like, not interested. Not interested. This is, whenever my term is completed in 2006, that will be 10 years, okay, in doing World Services. That's enough. There's room, there's lots of room for other people to come do this work. Okay, I'm not the only person qualified, talented, any of that, the only one to do this work. I want to see you there. You know, I want to see representation of people that aren't there. Because it takes a lot. It takes a lot. It does, and it's one of those things that there's no one on the board that doesn't do it begrudgingly.
You know, I feel very blessed and honored to have the opportunity. Currently, I'm serving as the vice chair of the board, which just trips me out. You know, he's from Springfield, Missouri. Run. You know, as it goes through my head on a regular basis. You know, how did I end up being there? You know, and it's just, I kept showing up. I kept doing what was asked of me, and I'll continue to do that. You know, being here today was one of those things, because most of you aren't aware that the request for someone to attend this conference was for Anthony E., okay, the executive director of the World Service Office. They requested Anthony to be here, but he couldn't. He had a scheduling conflict, so you got Tony and I as a substitute. Took two of us to replace Anthony. He'll like that. There you go, he'll hear it. So, you know, it's one of those that, you know, there are advantages and disadvantages. You know, and today, I can live with those. You know, I mean, my life is so absolutely phenomenally different than it has been throughout my recovery. You know, Lynn, unfortunately, said there are no board members living in California. My home group is the 8:30 candlelight meeting in Hollywood. I do live in California. I moved there a year ago this month, October, after living in Florida for 6 years. So I've been like the one of these nomadic people, you know, 6 years here, 6 years there. Was in Wisconsin for six, Florida for six. Now I'm in California, and people are asking me, where are you moving in 5 years? And New Zealand? Hell, I don't know. You know, Tennessee? You never know what's going to happen. You know, but I love serving. You know, it's one of those things that it relieves me of, you know, and my home group in Madison, the Why Not Monday Night group, modified the literature prayer in the front of the basic text as our opening. You know, and grant us a bond of selflessness that we may carry the message of recovery, that no addict seeking recovery need ever die from the horrors of addiction. I mean, that was part of our opening, you know, and that became very deeply ingrained in me about this is why I'm here. You know, it gets real clear for me about why I'm here. It's not about what I'm getting out of it. You know, it's about, you know, what can I do, and it's what I talk about. So that's it for me personally. I'm going to do that short. That's quick. Tony, you want to do basic text or WSO history?
Whichever. You go first.
Okay.
I want you to talk.
Some significant dates in WSO history. Okay, this is going to be somewhat, I've got a little document here that we'll work from. Try not to make it as dry as it possibly could be. Okay, there's just some things that, since we're recording the history, it's important for us to be there. In the 50s and 60s, as we're all aware, the office, such as it was, okay, traveled around in the trunk of cars or in somebody's closet or at someone's home. Whatever it was that we had, the little white book and the original IPs were being sent from there. In 71, it was the first World Convention, which is at La Mirada, as we were talking about, and there was a discussion then about having an office to support the fellowship, okay, to provide a locus and a central location, and that the funding for that would come from member contributions. You'll hear me say that a few times. In 1972, the WSO became official. They filed a doing business as, a DBA filing with the state of California, using Bob B's address on Crenshaw. That then meant by de facto that Bob's home was the WSO. Funding is scarce and donations were slim to none. At the Third World Convention in 74, a decision was made to incorporate the office and to set up a board of directors. Okay. State of California, most states, whenever you incorporate, you need a board of directors. In 74 to 76, the WSO moved to the Vineland address. Some of this is in the Miracles Happen book. Moved to the Vineland address in 74, the Suicide Prevention Center in 75, and then finally to Jimmy's house. Okay, and Fawn talked last night about the office at Jimmy's house over those years. In 76 was the first official World Service Conference. The WSO made reports about the size and whereabouts of the fellowship, as well as a plea for financial support of the Fellowship Service Center. That was the year that the NA-TREE is approved, and it contained a vision that the World Service Office would have a staff supporting the conference
and trustee committees, as well as a fully manned resource for the fellowship. The formal incorporation occurred in 1977 with the WSO receiving tax-exempt status, the 501c3 status from the IRS in 1978. That also is when Jimmy began giving everyone the tax-exempt status for all NA chapters around the United States, which was unfortunately not the thing that you're allowed to do, but it happened. We're still well-meaning. 77 to 82, there was support for the development of literature, the basic text and other IPs. Okay, and Bo and Sally talked about, you know, the development of our book. You know, so that was certainly there. In 81, 82, the first key tags were developed to commemorate clean time. What color was the original welcome key tag? Pink. Why was it pink? What I've heard, it was pink because it was cheap. Nobody wanted that color. Orange, okay. Let's see, in 1982, the basic text was approved at the World Service Conference. 83, there was the controversy around the fourth and ninth traditions. The second edition was printed after the World Service Conference with a number of new IPs going into the WSO inventory. In 1983, the WSO moved from Sun Valley, Jimmy's house, to Van Nuys. Okay, and Bob Stone was then hired as the new office manager. That began the development as well of some office staff there to support the conference and the World Service Office. In 84, the third edition was approved by WSC 84. The first project coordinators are hired, and the NA Way magazine becomes a WSO responsibility. Jim talked yesterday about the NA Way magazine as a conference committee, as I remember correct, sir? Yep. So it began WSO responsibility in 84. In 85, support for conference committees increases as increasing numbers of staff are hired, and that's when they began taking over the recording responsibilities for the World Service Conference. Okay, rather than having a secretary, the conference secretary take the minutes and try to keep track of that, they decided we could have our staff do that for us and provide that to them. 86, the WSC approves a revision of the Little White Book. Okay, and therefore also a revision to the basic text, which authorizes the copy, edit, which results in the fourth edition. They're in office space on Wyandotte in Van Nuys. That office space in Van Nuys, we had three separate sort of strip mall, you know, just straight back, front to the back in this office complex and a little spot across the street. Okay, so we had four different locations. If fellowship servicers wanted to speak to somebody in shipping, they had to go outside, walk down the street, and then go into the building where their office was located. So the World Service office was in four separate locations, albeit very close together. In 88, the fourth building was leased, and that's when the fifth edition of the basic text was approved, along with a five-year moratorium. In 1990, Bob Stone's contract was not renewed, okay? And the chair of the WSO, BOD, Stu T at that time, served as the interim executive director while a search was commenced. In 1991, the WSO was reaffirmed as the fellowship's sole publisher and copyright owner on the fellowship's behalf with full responsibility to protect its copyrights. The fifth edition was reaffirmed as the only currently approved version of the basic text, and the WSC, the World Service Conference, directed the WSO to print the introductory guide as a low-cost alternative to the basic text. There also then was the legal proceedings related to the owner of the copyrights of the basic text, i.e. the baby blue issue. Joe Gossett was then hired as the new executive director. Interestingly, in 1991, Spanish and Portuguese basic texts are published. Okay, so we began to have literature in languages other than English. In 1992, work began on the Fellowship Intellectual Property Trust. 1992, at the World Service Conference, the Just for Today Daily Meditation book was approved by the World Service Conference and became part of the WSO inventory. In 93, the litigation ended. It Works, How and Why was approved. The Fellowship Intellectual Property Trust was approved, which was, as an RSR serving at that time, was just the most fascinating and interesting thing to workshop at a
in our regional workshops, okay, and this is sort of an aside, in that because people wanted to review and input the Fellowship Intellectual Property Trust rather than say this is a document, it's a legal document that we need to just look at and accept or not accept, but they wanted to review and input and change words, and it's such fun when you have jailhouse lawyers wanting to write copyright law. Now let's see, the basic text in 93 was published in German and Brazilian. 94, Joe Gossett was terminated by the board of directors. The two assistant executive directors replaced him. Management structure, Anthony E. and George H. In 95, the basic text was published in Braille. George and Anthony were affirmed as the co-executive directors of the WSO. 96, the basic text was published in Hebrew. The vision statement and the mission statement were developed and approved at the 96 conference in Greensboro. And in 97, basic text in Italian, and WSO obtains Jimmy's archives. Okay, that was in 1997, what Steve was talking about a while ago. In 98, the STEP Working Guides and Miracles Happen were published, and the new World Service structure was put in place. So that's the recitation of the history. Basic text?
He said it all.
Did it get in there?
Yeah.
Okay. Was it sufficient? I'm only just...
Yeah, I think it was.
Okay.
I mean, I believe that, you know, the history of the basic text has basically been covered all weekend. You know, we continue to talk about why was this changed, why was that changed? Well, the fellowship was growing. And, you know, we're still going through this process of trying to get it all right. You know, I was talking at dinner last night about to a couple of guys, and it was... You know, I got clean in 1982, so it was on the first edition. And it's like, you know what? The whole idea is that if we don't continue to change and grow, we don't continue to keep our stuff updated, you know, people are getting clean today on the fifth edition. Is it the book that's keeping you clean? You know, it's the fellowship. It's the program. You know, it's being in touch with the addict. Because I don't know about y'all, but when I sat in the corner reading a book, it was usually after doing a spoon or a needle or something, you know, and it just, that never did do anything for me. But now what I can do is I can go back and I can look at the fifth edition and I can pull stuff out of it, because the answers are mostly there. In the first 10 chapters, they're mostly there. You know, but we continue to grow and we continue to change. And it's not the book that's keeping me clean. I'm not saying that it doesn't help, because it does help. But that's not what's keeping me clean. You know, Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, you people are helping me on a daily basis. If there's any questions about it, I mean, we've got some stuff here that we can probably answer your questions. Hello? To the best of our ability, anyway. I would like to say that we do translate, we translate our literature into 23 languages now, and that's growing on a daily basis. And something that we've touched on was donations coming from the fellowship. You know, we have forever been supporting ourselves through the sales of literature, and we continue to depend on selling our literature and selling stuff to support our fellowship. And I don't know about y'all, but for me, that's not us being self-supporting through our own contributions. You know, when you buy a book, you're not contributing. You're buying a book. You're buying a product. A contribution is me taking something out of my pocket and putting it in a basket and saying, you know what, guys? Use this to help better carry the message of recovery. Use this to help developing communities, not just outside the U.S., but all over the world. Because we're still struggling in the United States, too. You know, there are places that have one or two meetings a week that need a lot more. There's a lot more places we need to be presenting our program and talking about what the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous has available. You know, and we're doing that. We're starting to do that as a fellowship. We're starting to reach out to professionals and saying, you know what, guys? We want to find out. Through our public relations roundtable discussions, we're starting to find out what professionals want from us, what they know about us, what they don't know about us, what we wish they didn't know about us. You know, we're starting to find out, getting answers to questions that we've been afraid to ask. And now we're not. Because in order for our fellowship to grow and prosper, we need to have this information. We need to continue to grow and change. That's all I'm going to say for now.
At this point, I'd like to go to questions and answers. I think we've got lots of opportunities for questions. How much time do we have, Molly? 25 minutes. Okay. 45. 45, great.
We've got 10 minutes.
I'm going to ask James King.
Hey, James.
I was wondering if either of you had seen any of the advertisements that our World Board is presently putting into professional magazines.
The board is putting, okay, the question was just
have you seen any of the advertisements that Oz is putting into professional magazines right now?
I'm not aware of any advertisements, although that's going into professional magazines. And that being said, that function would be directly delegated to the public relations and marketing staff at the World Service Office as a direct approach toward reaching treatment providers, treatment professionals, as well as treatment facilities, correctional facilities, toward direct sales from NAWS versus selling through Hazelden and then getting to the end user. We want to get it directly to the end user rather than going through Hazelden with a discount. We can sell it directly to the end user at a with a lesser degree of discount. So yeah, there are likely some. Okay. Who's next?
Ron, is what it says of it is you see the cultural difference it has in regard to the translation of our literature into A in the third world.
Part of the cultural impediments with the development of our message for Asian populations in particular, and you may be aware that a year ago, Anthony and another member of the fellowship traveled to China and had been invited there as part of a delegation talking about how to address the addiction problem that they have in China. Governmental estimates by the Chinese government are they have 500,000 heroin addicts. Among 3 billion people, they've got 500,000 heroin addicts. I think they count very strangely. So we know that the problem with addiction extends beyond just heroin. Okay. We went in. Part of the issue there is the cultural issue is that being seen as an addict is a very shameful thing. And often you're ostracized and shunned from your family. And admitting that in a public venue then is very much a shame to the family as well as to the individual. So it, you know, overcoming that and standing as, once an addict, always an addict, you know, we're trying to make that old lie is dead, as we say. That effort needs lots of room to grow in China and other Asian countries. Some of the Middle Eastern countries, the way that they deal with addiction is with a bullet. They can cure addiction. They shoot you. They kill drug addicts. Death penalty. That's it. That's the only cure. Some of that's showing up in some southeastern countries as well, particularly in the Muslim countries. So certainly there are issues and concerns about the cultural impediments and the cultural obstacles that we have to overcome as it relates to carrying the message and developing a message that's viable to those people within their own culture group, okay, which directly comes out of our vision statement. How many here are familiar with the NAWS vision statement? One element of that, the first element of that, our vision is that one day every addict in the world has a chance to experience our message in his or her own language and culture and find the opportunity for a new way of life. Okay, that's the first bullet of the vision statement, so that's what we're committed to. And it is something that we have to be aware of, cognizant of, and cautious about as it relates to carrying our message in countries that don't share our same cultural base.
Does that answer your question? Second, number two. My personal?
Yes. Well,
okay.
But your part, what's the difference between your parcel and not? If there is.
It's huge, okay? It's huge. You know, and part of my understanding, and whenever that was going on, the judge very clearly said, this seems to be an internal matter. You have a common goal. Apparently, both of which of you have lost sight of, and it's time to sit down, mediate your difference, come to some agreement, and move forward in going toward that goal because it's greater than either of you. Okay? That's my understanding. That's my personal understanding. And he was, as I remember, very, in the language that he used, and it's been a long time since I read that decision, okay? In the language that he used, he was very pointed in making it clear that each camp, and I use that word intentionally, each camp in their position had lost sight of what the common goal was. Okay, so I think the judge was very clear about sit down, shut up, work together, do what it is that you need to do. And that's my personal opinion. Okay, that's, and I'm going to get in trouble for saying that. The translation process does hinge on the local translation committee doing that. Then there, within the context of our translations, we have the idea of conceptual fidelity, which means that we have a base understanding. These key concepts mean essentially the same thing in our English terms as it does in the native language term, okay, which can be somewhat slippery, okay? For example, in German, our trusted servants, you know, we have no leaders. Our leaders are but trusted servants, that's the phrase. Our leader in German is a very emotionally charged term called Führer. So we had to work very diligently to overcome some of those issues. Time frame on that is going to, I don't have that specifically, Mary Jane, to be able to say it should be done in 8 months or a year. But it sometimes is a lengthy process for those first 10 chapters to be completed. The local translation, conceptual guidelines, the glossary for those key terms. Then we have a translator look at it to see if they can translate it back to English and then come back into the Turkish and see how it is. Part of the difficulty that we have had is that whenever you utilize a professional translator to do that, or even a native speaker, it's going to be influenced by the level of their education. And having it written, you know, sometimes we have been deemed for some of our later literature or more recent literature that it is not accessible to our members, that we use words that are too complex for some of our membership who may not have good reading skills. So it's in the process. I couldn't give you a specific time. Tony, you got another question? Where are you at? Oh, Jimmy.
I'm Jim.
Jim, sorry.
You're not going to lose our lemons this
year. Do you want me?
Resolution matters. Or where are we at with resolution matters? Well, you got it. Let's go to that. And do you truly believe you can become a world fellowship in this?
Okay, resolution A. For those of you who aren't aware, Resolution A was part of the resolutions that were adopted at the 96 conference out of the resolution group that talked about downsizing the conference, having equal geographic representation, and consensus-based decision-making. There were three primary bullets within Resolution A. Where the board is we have made it very clear that the movement toward that will need to be a grassroots developed movement. for World Services to come in and say to currently seated regions participating in a World Service Conference for the board to make a proposal that would disenfranchise a currently seated participant is in conflict with our traditions. We do not govern. We cannot dictate to the region, this is how you will be represented. So that change, you know, continues to be on the burner, continues to be, I know there are, just foreshadowing for you, those of you who are interested in the conference agenda report for 2004, there are a minimum of two motions that are being submitted by regions that have some differing levels of degree of specifics for the implementation of Resolution A, but there are people within the fellowship who are interested in moving that forward. Will that make us, you know, with the adoption of a proposal that moves us toward a downsized conference with equal geographic representation and consensus-based decision-making, will that make us a unified worldwide fellowship? No. It's not a structural thing. It's about us reaching one another. And some of the issues, for example, Brazil. Okay, the region of Brazil is the entire country of Brazil. Okay, the country of Brazil geographically is as large as the United States. They have 3,000 meetings a week in Brazil. That's one region. Okay, how many meetings a week are in? I'm looking in. Anybody here from volunteer region that knows about how many meetings you have in the volunteer region? Nobody knows. Okay. I can't remember. It's somewhere in the order of about 400 to 500, as I remember. Okay. So somebody's, Jim, you know about Alabama, Northwest Florida, how many meetings a week? How many groups? 98 groups. So, you know, it's kind of like maybe if there's one a week. So that kind of tells you a little bit about how services, you know, some regions are very small in geography, okay? Some are very, very large. Australia, the continent of Australia is one region. Okay, the country of New Zealand is one region. So you go from continent to two islands. So it, you know, that whole regional structure can be very much, it's greatly varied. And that has been modified somewhat with the adoption of the seating of new regions, the criteria for recognition of new conference participants. So there are some inroads toward making sure that what we're doing in seating a new conference participant serves us well. I can remember at my first World Service Conference, we seated a RSR from a region that was an island in the Caribbean, who attended for most of the first day and part of the last day, but then was seated as a region, and we continued to call the roll, including that region, and they weren't part of. And they dropped off. Turns out it was mainly an area service committee, and that area service committee joined the Florida region about 3 years ago. So where's that? So next question. Tony, you got somebody? Nope. Tony's rumming with the mic, and you can jump in on any of these responses, Tony.
I'm having Dan. My question, I'm not interested at all, but knowing that different areas, English countries, basic text, higher power, and God, going into areas such as the entire Middle East being its entire mostly Muslim to the higher power that I guess we would call Allah. Is that in the main text today that when we use the God of your understanding today, is it in there the Allah of your understanding?
And Dan, it's interesting, you're not a linguist, but you hit on the key difficulty in translating for Arabic, okay, with the Muslim countries. It is heresy in the Muslim faith to have an understanding of God. It's complete oppositional to what it is that we say, and that's been one of the greatest difficulties as it relates to that language group in obtaining their translation. And we had a meeting We brought the Arab-speaking communities together, I guess it's been almost 3 years ago in Bahrain, where we sat them down. They're working toward resolution of that, but the message needs to be carried in the culture in which the people live. And if you're saying something that's so completely inflammatory as to say you have an understanding of God in a country where that is political heresy, it's theologic heresy as well as politically suicide. They're working very carefully to identify solutions to that, and they're continuing to work on that. We thought we had found something that was working for them during that meeting in Bahrain. They developed something that seemed like it was going to be sufficient for their purposes, but upon later reflection, when they returned to their home communities and talked to their local membership, didn't quite meet the mark. So we're continuing to work with them. Actually, last week at the executive committee meeting, we talked about the need for a follow-up meeting with that language group so we can sit them down again, the representatives, in a neutral location where it would be safe for World Services members to travel and attend to be there. You know, right now, we're not sending anybody into the Middle East. Just, we wouldn't do it. Does that answer your question? I mean, it's a huge, not being a linguist, you hit the crux of the matter right on the head.
So at the present time, there's not meetings in the Middle East?
There are meetings in the Middle East, and there are meetings in those countries. The languages that they're using, they may be using translated materials. It may not necessarily be in Arabic. They're being very cautious in their communities and in their meetings about how they phrase the third and the 11th step, you know, and how it is that they practice that. It's a big issue within that language group. It's a huge issue, as well as the other Muslim countries that are not necessarily Arabic in nature. Part of Malaysia, some of those languages in Malaysia, a lot of the Indo-Chinese languages, who are Muslim, large Muslim population as well. It's going to continue to be an issue.
Thank you.
My name is Bob. I'm Matt.
Hey, Bob.
And I really think this has been a miraculous weekend, and I've had some great reconciliation. But keep it real and real. Although I get along with 7 members of the Super Board, on a personal level, I look at the corporation as a region, and a lot of that is because of the seven traditions that become independent to outside organizations. And in 82 of the three, structure and part about 43 pages in my written report on the concepts in that area, which is very, very, very carefully written, and we get a lot of safeguards in the fellowship, and even has lines that are necessary to the General Service Office of the Board of Nations to instruction for the General Service Office at that time. And our 12 concepts don't read anything like that. And they were so clearly written that when we came in, most of the network, the scholars that had read all the methods and the thinking about the conference and calling on it, and as they go on, were so dismayed when the things passed that they just shuddered and walked away in disgust. A lot of them came to the back. And there's a lot of people just leaving our class minds, but they hate the inviting, they hate the antagonism between. I've had people from Northwest Pacific refer to the WSO thugs, and this is common for the criminal. A lot of it has to do with human nature, American culture, and centralization of power in human hands. I have always thought, knowledge is power, and power belongs to the people. And the more hands are in on it, which can get unnecessarily muddy. But we used to have a system of them to everybody, and them to everything. About whatever was going on, and if you didn't know, they found out pretty damn easy. And our job was to keep them informed and invigorated, edified. If you remember Narcotics Anonymous, that's a hell of a good thing. You should be familiar. That's just great. And find people up, invigorated. We don't have that anymore. We have this like fucking information. I spend every day, and all I do is fight every day. Believe emails, because they get such an overwhelming risk. And I have much more money than my. And I hope that that wins somebody. time we really voted on some section was, I mean, too many people died on the day. I tell you, if you don't understand what I'm doing, just start a few more funerals in the country. But I think that every bag in this room should go with a concrete way of concepts, compared to our concepts, because our concepts suck. We undermine the fellowship. What used to be residency is to now have a group discussion, a long group discussion, to get an informed vote to say yes. Person social and parent and conscience can go in and say, what was what I said about this guy's whole vote? And the group said, well, hey, our vote doesn't count, so we don't count. So it disempowers the fellowship. A lot of people walk away with that. And you guys are blind. But one of the problems with centralization is the guys inside the circle think, well, we see everything from up here. Well, we're in the best position to know. Well, it's more efficient to do this. Well, that may actually be true if efficiency is only there from the matter. But if you don't involve members, the members don't feel like they're part of and know what's going on. I mean, I think Plato said that a nation, a population that is not acknowledged of its technological advancement becomes starved philosophically. Or kind of synopsis becomes starved philosophically. Every week I share books. I see sometimes 10 or 20 or 30 books every time. There's a growing need for what we do. We're the neighbor of the persona non grata. We're becoming forced from beyond. And that sucks. We're going to make your websites. We're here to stay. We'll keep doing this every damn day of the rest of our fucking lives. Because we don't care about the money. You need to think about the fellowship spent millions of dollars writing the basic text. Just because the numbers didn't show up on paper doesn't mean anything. You're supposed to get it. And we didn't want a royalty, we didn't want a byline. My services made me an offer and a publisher. A small one. They're many larger than that smaller to catch plenty of the spectrum. But nevertheless, we weren't to begin with. But we knew from the beginning that we're not going to take a royalty, we did not want a byline. And people in the rooms need to know that we have members that will sacrifice their part, but it wasn't 10% of $100 million. We'll sacrifice our part of that so that our people don't die. That's all we do it for. We'll never stop. We will not go away. We'll always be heard. And our writings, and our books, and our media will go on. Because that heart and love in it, message, it ain't always right. But you know, there's the equipment. If you have a chance to share it, come to help. So anyway, I just wanted to, like, you know, I say a lot of stuff to have y'all's back. This is my very first chance to say it.
Thanks, Bo, and I fully agree that, you know, sitting in the chair that I sit doesn't allow me to see everything. You know, and that's why we continue to have the interaction with the fellowship and talk to people and solicit those voices that may not agree. You know, I remember our breakfast in Atlanta a couple of years ago whenever we sat together and had an opportunity to talk and to share and to see things a little differently. And, you know, that's part of the commitment that we have to take on. We all come at it from the same. We come at it from different places, but our goal is the same. Thanks. Next, Tony, you got up.
Oh. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, Bruce.
I'll stand up.
Thanks. That makes it easier for everybody.
I have a couple questions. I'll try to get them into it as fast as I can. I get cut off by the technology. First question would be, what kinds of financial resources are available at World Services right now? I remember seeing a line item budget last year's financial report for historical data gathering.
Okay.
I remember seeing a line item in the financial report last year for historical data gathering. Is that money being utilized? Is there currently a data gathering effort going on through World Services?
The historical data gathering line item that you saw in the budget was part of the proposed budget items. We each conference cycle will propose a budget for the coming cycle with projects that are on the front burner. Absolutely, this has to be done. The Public Relations Roundtable, for one, is, you know, in furthering that purpose, is one that currently is underway. There are other items on that budget that those are going to be as resources and time are available to accomplish those. As it relates to the historical data gathering, to my understanding, the efforts that we have currently are making sure that we are soliciting through NAS News, the NAWAY magazine, the conference report, other elements where we're trying to establish a dialogue is to obtain that information from members of the fellowship to send to the WSO. As Fawn correctly stated last night, you know, we have some pretty extensive archives at the World Service Office. We actually have a very large room that's dedicated for that purpose, that it's humidity and temperature controlled because of the fragility of some of the papers that are increasing in age, and the tapes, the audio tapes, you know, some of the tapes that Jimmy made are unusable. So we are, you know, utilizing that, and we're digitizing those, getting those over onto. But at this time, it is a pretty low-level effort, frankly.
That would lead me to the second question. What are the chances of the World War III working group that would whose sole purpose would be working with history and being involved, you know, utilizing fellowship volunteers in that effort? If, you know, if there's not resources available at the office to utilize fellowship volunteers who are committed to you know, making the history available?
What are the chances? That's almost like, are we in Vegas? What are the chances? It's a matter of how it's viewed as a specific priority within this conference cycle. You know, this past conference cycle, the priority for efforts by the staff at the office as well as volunteers was the development of and forwarding the sponsorship book. That was the largest priority that we had. That was the largest effort that we undertook. The Public Relations Roundtable are underway, getting the foundational pieces there. Historical data gathering, anybody that's attended this conference is going to be interested in making sure that that moves forward. You know, I think it's probably a pretty safe population to say everyone here would like to see that come as a work group. It's had an ongoing level of support by different members of the conference as well as members of the board. So it continues to be one of the items on the budget, and we have 10 minutes.
You know, we also take into consideration every time somebody from fellowship writes us a letter. You write a letter to the office and you address it to the World War, we get it. You know, it's not like that there's somebody sitting over there saying, this is not important, this is not important, this is not important. We get it. So we continue to ask y'all, you know, send us the input. Send us, tell us what you want us to do. Come out here. Take it to your CSR and your RTM and your RD or whatever y'all call it, y'all place. I don't carry it with us. So I believe that the WSO is a central thing. And I believe that the groups and the people that contact World Services and say, you know what, we have a problem with this issue in our area. And they go back in the archives and find some stuff from other areas and other home groups and send it to them. You know, there's not one person that sits at the World Service Office and answers the phone and has all the answers. It doesn't happen like that. You know, we as a World Board depend on the fellowship to tell us what's going on. Because the 14 members that are there right now are not going to every NA community all over the world asking what's going on. We depend on y'all to communicate with us too. You know, it's just very important. You know, so if you have an idea, send it in. And the more time you spend in, the more it gets looked at. You know, the more in front of our face it is. But if you sit in your home group and you don't take that advantage and you don't take that opportunity, and then you're going to bitch at us because you're not doing anything about this. You know? our history is very important, and it's up to each of us to continue to carry that ball. It's up to each of us to make sure that when your home group registered, that you have a record of it. It's important that when you have changes going on in your area, enter ASC, there's a record of it in the World Service. You know, we continue to ask for this stuff, and what we continue to get is right. I love this fellowship, and I've dedicated my life to being of service to the fellowship. And I know what they're talking about when they say the answering service calls me at 3 o'clock in the morning. You know, I have a wife, and she doesn't like it. And she's not on the answering service. But I am. And sometimes it's pretty hard to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and answer the phone and say, you know what? What can I do to help? How can I help? Like Steve said, where are you? You know? But that's what we do. Being a service country that I am, I mean, we change things in our area. When I got a phone call from management service, I went to a hotel, and I knocked on the door, and the guy opened the door and put a shotgun in my face. It's like, you know what? I ain't doing this shit no more. I'm not willing to die for him, you know, or her. And that's what it's all about, is us sharing that history, us keeping it. You know what? There's a lot of our history, and Paul said, there's a lot of our history that's out there in the world. And if you don't share it with the World Service Office, the fellowship owns it. The World War doesn't own it, the WSO doesn't own it, the fellowship owns it. You know, I don't believe that there's anybody that's sitting on the board that says, I own this part of the district. That's bullshit. It's the fellowship. You know, we want to keep it like that.
Okay, we've got 5 minutes, and there's two things that I want to get accomplished in that.
Can I tell something out real quick? I won't stop you.
Okay, go.
Okay, every time we do an update on the United Foundation Group literature, we send it out to the World Service, and we haven't sent something in a while, so here it is.
Okay.
And there's some of your written input.
Thank you. Right. We've got 5 minutes. We've been asked to...
Okay, I have 30 seconds worth of questions.
Okay. Go. And then we got it. You're just going to be the last question. Everybody's going to have to accept that.
In the next division, it talks about something in the second division. My question is, do you personally, because that's all that really matters to me, and do you suspect that NAS perceives themselves as directly responsible trusted servants?
Absolutely.
And who is it that you're directly responsible to?
The groups.
The groups. The fellowship and archives.
Absolutely.
Okay. My last question is, you stated an opinion about our basic text. Actually, you read it from Sheet, but it was an opinion. Are you open to input, other opinions?
Sure.
Okay.
All right. So, now that was the last question.
I'm
sorry,
Okay,
that was the last question. I'm sorry. We're undone with time. We're running behind to the schedule for the day. Two items. One, you're currently serving board members, Jim B. from Chicago, Illinois, David J. from Manchester, England, Daniel S. from, I can't remember the town in Germany, Saul A. from Panama, Giovanna G. from Colombia, Bella B. from Australia, Lib E. from New Zealand, Tony W. from Ladson, South Carolina, Craig R. from Raleigh, North Carolina, Jane N. from Connecticut, Tom M. from Hawaii, Ron H. from Albuquerque, New Mexico, Susan C. from Blaine, Washington, and myself, Bob J. from Los Angeles. The vision, we were asked to share the vision, and part of that is related to, I want everybody just to be aware that currently fellowship contributions in the NAS budget account for about 8% of the budget. So fully self-supporting through our own contributions is a wonderful tradition that we read on a regular basis but we somehow failed to practice that as it relates to supporting our World Service office. So my vision is that if there are almost 30,000 meetings a week, if 20,000 of those are the United States, if each of those meetings sent a dollar a meeting a week, that would raise over $500,000, which would almost double the amount the Seventh Tradition contributions going directly to the office. So in a World Services vision, all of the efforts of Narcotics Anonymous World Services are inspired by the primary purpose of the groups we serve. Upon this common ground, we stand committed. Our vision is that one day, every addict in the world has the chance to experience our message in his or her own language and culture and find the opportunity for a new way of life. NA communities worldwide and NA World Services work together in a spirit of unity and cooperation to carry our message of recovery. Narcotics Anonymous has universal recognition and respect as a viable program of recovery. As our commonly held sense of the highest aspirations that set our course, our vision is our touchstone, our reference point, inspiring all that we do. Honesty, trust, and goodwill are the foundation of these ideals. In all of our service efforts, we rely upon the guidance of a loving higher power. Thank you.